And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of your favorite celebrities. This is Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
What up, world? You already know what it is. This is Gold Mines. You know what we do here. It's sad that I have to explain it, but just in case some forget, I'd love to give you an amazing reminder. This is a show where we get inside the minds of amazing individuals. And oh my God, today will be no different. Why? Well, because of individuals. They don't fucking disappear. They reappear. And actually, the good thing about having relationships is that I know where the dope people are. I know where the good energy is. I know where the minds are that I want you to fucking know. I know where the information is that I feel is valuable. Today's information, I feel like it's going to be special. Why? Well, because I'm talking to a friend. You know, a friend is actually unfair. Let's say a sister. I'm talking to a sister. Ladies and gentlemen, this sister of mine, you may know from her latest work on BMF. That's right. BMF season 3, by the way, which premieres, I believe, March 1st. It's going down on Stars. That's going to be a big deal. But before she got there, she was an amazing VJ on MTV's TRL. After that, she's acted in some of, I would say, our culture's most iconic shows like Power, Shy, of course, BMF. More importantly, she was also in Think Like a Man, an amazing movie. I'm not saying that because I was in it. I'm saying that because it actually was. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Lala Anthony to Gold Mines.
Hey, Lala, how are you? How are you? How do you do all of this stuff? Like, I thought I was crazy, but you got me beat.
Heroin. What you got to do, find you a good dealer, La. You get you a good dealer, a good supplier. Put it in the vein. go right to the vein, or you can put coffee beans in your butt. Either one of them give you energy.
Coffee beans. I don't think you could go at this speed if you didn't love it. You got to love it.
No, I am beyond excited about what I do. And I love the discovery. I love the discovery of new. But this, honestly, you know what Gold Mines is? Gold Mines is like, this is like a hobby. And it's one where I find joy out of because, you know, I get to talk to people in a manner that they don't normally talk. This is unprepared conversation. It's authentic dialogue, which is what's non-existent, you know, in today's time. Everything is so programmed. People feel like they have to be and say a certain thing or be a certain way all the time. And on this one, you know, it's about flowers. It's about love. So the level of comfort that the guests get to talk to me with is different. There's no salacious activity here.
Yeah, I love
that's the beautiful thing.
I love that.
That's what you say. I love that. With that being said, La, you know, I want to start off in such a dope place with you because your career is one that's full of transition now. And before you get into the topic and conversation of transition, I love to talk about the beginning, right? And the beginning, of course, is you, young you. And when you go and talk about the TRL days, that was such an exciting time because that world at the time was one where that was the way in, right? It was like, you know, they had these crazy moments where people would line up around the corners. They were looking for their new VJs. They were looking for the new faces, the new talent. And, you know, those that were lucky enough to make it to the final stages put themselves in a position to be seen. My question for you at the beginning stages in the entry is why this business? Why and what drove you to make the decision to lean towards the world of entertainment media in the earlier days?
This is Gold Mines, hosted by Kevin Hart.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Swing into Seaside Golf in Ocean City, Maryland. Play like a pro at 17 championship courses designed by golf legends like Jack Nicklaus and Arthur Hills. Tee off on sweeping vistas at Eagle's Landing. Savor the coastal views of Lighthouse Sound. Or see why Ocean City Golf Club is considered one of the Mid-Atlantic's finest fairways. Whether you're sneaking in a quick round on a family vacation or going all in on a golf getaway, fun is always in play at Ocean City, Maryland. Plan your trip at OCOcean.com.
We return to Gold Mines, hosted by Kevin Hart.
So in the earlier days, it was just because I loved music. It was simply because I loved music. I didn't have a career plan. Everything kind of happened by accident. I just loved, was such a fan of music. So I was always like at radio stations or music store openings, anything where I could really feel music or get close to artists that I was a fan of and just, you know, celebrate their work. So I started interning way before the TRL days at the radio station in Atlanta with Shaka and Ludacris. So that was like the 16-year-old me interning for Shaka, just like a young girl trying to figure my way. And I knew music. That's what I knew and what I was good at. So Shaka gave me a chance interning, and then Chris ultimately put me on, you know, the radio with him. And that's when I started getting known in that world. And after that, you know, the MTV opportunity came around, which at that time was unheard of. One, to be African-American Hispanic woman on MTV. That wasn't really happening. You had Ananda, and that was like the only thing. So
Ananda Lewis.
Yes, Ananda, icon. So I was just honored to even be chosen and represent us on MTV, because you didn't see us like that on MTV. And when I got that job, it was such an incredible moment. But I think it took me looking back on it to realize how special it was. Sometimes it becomes a job. You're there every day. You know how it is, Kev. You're on set, you're working. And sometimes you got to really stop and take it all in. Because when I think back to the TRL days now, I'm like, that was crazy times, flooding Times Square every day with thousands of kids, all the icons.
History.
Talked to us. It was historic, but it was like a job. You're just going every day, going, going, going. And now when I look back, I'm like, we were in the center of pop culture and some real moments. And I'm proud to say, as you know, late in my teens, early 20s, that I was a part of all of that.
I'll take it a step further for you. I'll take it a step further and give you a different piece of realization that you may or may not have, right? First of all, the radio background that you speak of, and, you know, interning, and then of course, you know, being a part of the radio show with Luda, you know, that was your world of grooming, you know, for the opportunity that had yet to present itself. Because when that opportunity did present itself, you were so well-spoken, you were so comfortable. And of course, radio is the best preparation for speech. You're talking to people every day, you're talking across the airwaves, you're constantly talking in a manner where you want everyone to be able to receive what it is you're saying. Yeah. You don't want anybody to be confused. Mm-hmm. Here's the crazy thing about the TRL days, right? And this is why I wanted to start here. You are responsible for popping the pop culture, right? So the young, you know, the young R&B, the young, the hip hop, the young pop, they, without the TRL exposure back in the day, it was very hard for success to be obtained. Mm-hmm. So you were very much a necessary asset to those individuals, right? That were coming through at that time. And the relationships that you were able to create and develop over the course of time, I would say ultimately probably are like some of the most valuable relationships today, because you were there. How long were you at TRL?
I was there for probably 5 years, 6 years.
Five, 6 years. So through that time, I mean, while you're in it, you don't, like you said, it's the job, right? Yeah. It's the job. But you, okay, it's Britney Spears this day. It's Timberlake this day. You got Usher coming this day. You got Jay-Z. You got Destiny's Child, Beyonce. Like, if you think about it, the Mariah Carey's of the world, this is so, so deaf when they were coming. By the way, this is where hip-hop was desperately trying to get to the MTV side because they wanted that crossover wave. So there was so much of a merger and, like, synergy of what from the artist. I would say, do you now look back and like pinch yourself? Like when you go and say, fuck, look at the relationships that I now have, but that are genuine. Mm-hmm. These are genuine developed relationships that came from the space and place of work.
Yeah, I definitely do. It's mind blowing when you put it that way, because a lot of my friends, family now are from the MTV days, and also seeing everyone come up at the same time. One person that comes to mind distinctly is 50. Like, I met him when he was promoting Get Rich or Die Trying, and we just instantly hit it off, and we just always communicated, always said like we were going to look out for each other. And now all these years later, Power comes up around, which is the biggest show on television. And 50's like, remember what we talked about all these years and our elevation and our growth. Now it's the time to do something together. So we do Power, and it's an insane hit. And then BMF comes and he's like, I'm not done with you, Lyle. We got to get to this BMF bag next. And we do that. But all that cultivated from MTV, TRL, him promoting Get Rich or Die Trying. And he used to come there and say, I only want La to interview me. That's who I feel comfortable with. La gets it. She's the culture. That's who I'm going to talk to. And now, look, all these years later, I would still say he's one of my closest friends, a mentor, and someone who's always looked out for me in business and television and film and everything.
Well, it's a great segue because, you know, as we now talk about the progression, I was going to say, you know, being in the space of VJ, hosting, you know, journalism, where and when did you say, okay, I'm ready for the more. I like this, and you know, this space was great, but I'm ready for the more. I'm ready for the opportunities to come that are more than just a personality. I'm ready to, like, I'm ready to really dabble in the space of acting. Like, I want to do it. When was it that you feel like that bug got incentivized by you?
So the funny thing is, during the MTV days, we would always hear, literally almost every day, you would hear MTV is a gift and a curse. After MTV, no one really does anything. You would constantly hear that, like, enjoy it now, because when it's done, this is it. This is the peak. Like, there's nothing.
From who? Do you think that was, like, from coworkers or people that were just in there?
Prior people that worked there, just seeing, you know, some career paths that happened to other people. You just felt like, this is it. Like, after MTV, where does everybody go? You know, and then they used to do these specials, Kev. They used to be like, where is so-and-so? Like, after MTV,
where are they now?
Where are they now? Yeah. Like, yes. No, they were just gone. And I just kept telling myself, I'm going to break that. Like, I'm not going to be a part of that. Like, this is just the beginning for me. So being on television, another thing with TRL that people don't understand, that's live TV, Kev. That's a different beast. And people don't give it the respect that they need to, like, to do a show live is something completely different. With thousands of people in the crowd, you know, you're talking to these icons and celebrities, you can't mess up. It's live. If you mess up, you got to keep going. So I was trained in live television, and a lot of people don't have that type of training that I have. So I'm great at that. But I was like, how do I take this and turn it into something else? So I just thought, like, okay, I'm comfortable on TV. I'm comfortable in front of cameras. I speak really well. Let me try this acting thing. That seems like the next, like, natural progression. So I'm like, how do I become an actor? Oh, I enroll myself in acting class and acting school and take this seriously, because for a long time it wasn't happening. I was La La from MTV. That's it. Every audition, every producer. Oh, you're the girl from MTV. VJs don't become actresses. I mean, we want you in a movie as La La. You can do a cameo. I'm like, I don't want to be La La. And I just worked really hard and just knew at some point I would get my break with hard work. And I really feel like, I mean, you and I, we did Soul Plane together. I felt like that was kind of like still a La La kind of character. But my break for me was, you know, when Shayla and Will Packer saw my audition for Think Like a Man and gave me a shot. And Will Packer still tells a story. When I auditioned, my legs were shaking. I was like shaking, but he just saw something and was like, you could do this. And to be, you know, amongst you and Taraji and Cab and Megan and Regina and just all the talent that was in that movie was just mind blowing to me. And that's where I felt like, no, like I can do this. Like, I can really do this.
Well, the dope thing about you, La, is like, you're not a stranger to the idea of hard work. Like, you are a pure example of, all right, I'm gonna go get it. I'm gonna figure it out. I'm gonna get it. And, you know, and going to get it, there's going to be some bumps, hills, curves, but none of them are going to deter me. Yes. And then Think Like a Man, I think the dope thing that we were actually able, as we're talking about just looking back on moments, right? Like, years ago, Think Like a Man was. But when you look at the idea and component attached to a cultural class of like, oh shit, this movie is actually like, this is an evergreen movie now. This is a classic. This is a classic. And wow, you look at the personnel attached to it, right? You look at you. You look at Terrence. You look at the Jerry of it all. And the reason why I say, you guys, these were cast members of this movie that were all looking to, like, break. By the way, myself included, I'm looking for the break. I'm looking for my breakout role. I'm looking for the thing that's going to help launch me. We all had an energy and want, but I think there was also a high level of support and understanding everyone's need, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a nice amount of baton passing there. And it ended up being something that was dope that expanded into part two. The roles got bigger. The roles got bigger. It wasn't smaller. They got bigger. What's the feeling attached to that? Okay, it's not just one, it's part two. You get the call to come and do another one and play again. At this point, do you feel like, fuck, it's working? It's working out.
I felt the shift. Something is happening here and people are now taking me seriously in this space. And, you know, everyone on that movie was just so supportive. We're still in emails and group texts to this day. You know how many years ago that was to still be communicating and watching every, like, no one's lacking right now. Everyone's career has taken off and done great things. And it all, not that it started there, but that was just like, for a lot of us, for me, it was the start. For you, after that, you was completely.
But it was. But you're absolutely right. It was. Like, and that's, like, it's dope as hell when you can look at that. Like, I remember we were, Shayla had called and she was like, look, I'm desperately trying. She's been trying for the longest time to get this reunion together, right? And I was like, look, Shay, when you do, I'm going to be here for you. There's no way that I'm not going to participate, because there is a level of loyalty that I had to that group. But to your point, you know, it's one of those things where you look at it and everybody has been able to branch off and still do. Everybody is flourishing in their own way. Mm-hmm. And now I want to keep talking about your level of flourish, because as you brought up power, right? And we talk about the opportunity. You said something really dope. You said, nobody wanted to see me as anything other than Lala, the host. Lala, the MTV host. So breaking that is what the priority was. Not only did you like break it, but it was like a demand for respect within the break. Mm-hmm. Power comes along, and to your point, it's a relationship. 50 comes back. Lala got something dope for you. And taking on power, did you have any idea about the storyline that was going to be attached to your character and the potential of what it would be or where it would go? Or was it just one stage in the beginning?
So it was just a recurring character, not a series regular. And for those who don't know, recurring is just someone that pops up here and there. You're not on every episode. You come here and there. So 50 was like, you know, we really have to convince the showrunner that you can do this. Again, Kev, I'm doing good, but I still have to convince. I'm still,
prove.
We know her. We love her as like a host and a TV, but an actress, like, can she really do this? So it's still convince. I'm like, I don't want you to give it to me. Make me audition, put me in the room. So I auditioned, and it was just a recurring character. Keisha was a recurring character. And then after some really great work and fans really, you know, taken to the character, I got the call like, we want to turn her into a series regular. And that's when I was like, oh shit, like something is happening again. And that's when it was just such a moment and testament to like my hard work and never giving up. Like you said, it's easy for people to just put you in a box and say, hey, we want you over here, but not over here, and to be discouraged and lose faith. And, you know, even friends of mine and family of mine would say like, well, you're a great host. Like, just do that. Like, you can make a lot of money. People love you. You're great. Just do that. I'm like, I don't just want to do that. I want to show that I can do other things. And I don't want to be in that mentality of putting myself in a box. Like, that's all I can do. So I just pushed myself. And when I got the call that Keisha was going to be turned into a series regular, I was like, this is a moment. And I'll never forget. This is something I get chills talking about it. I'll never forget being in Times Square and in the middle of Times Square where I started my MTV career, and looking and having a billboard in Times Square that was just my face. It was just me. And it said, you know, Lala Anthony as Lakeisha in Power. That was just a surreal moment. And my mom came and my friends, we put like a blanket, my family, we had like champagne, and we took like, that was such a moment. I'm from Brooklyn. I grew up in New York. To just break, you know, everything I was that everyone told me I couldn't do and be on MTV, that was like, wow. But then go back and have a billboard in Times Square as an actor on a hit show was just something that's a feeling I'll never forget.
See, so as people, you know, wonder when you say like, yo, Kev, like, wow, God, you do so much. Mm-hmm. This is the joy in me doing what I'm doing. Like these stories, these antidotes that are able to be given, you know, I feel like the listeners need to know that. Mm-hmm. They need to hear about the full circle moment. They need to hear about the joy and like real fucking value that was given to you by you simply putting your mind to something and seeing it come into play, seeing it play out correctly. Now, what I do love about you saying, okay, there's the billboard. Wow, power. Fuck Times Square. Holy shit, MTV. I was right here. I was hosting. God damn it. I'm right here now, but I'm promoting. The show continues. Okay, the journey of the show goes. And now ultimately, the journey of the show comes to an end.
Yes.
It comes to an end. We got to have the hard conversation. An impactful character, well, everybody's got to die.
Everybody's
got to die, okay? And at this point on Power, people get laid out left and right. Now, as a producer, I know what the stories are. I know how they're being developed. I know the writer's room, the showrunners, et cetera. What was the conversation had with you before the time of departure? Because they got to talk to you. You don't just come in and read the script. They're going to prep you for it. So give me the world of prep and the feeling that you had attached to that time. By the way, these are great questions, Kevin. Great fucking questions, Kevin. How do I do it?
It's a great question.
Give me your feeling at that moment.
So, okay. Well, let's start with what you said on Power. Every time you got the script, you were bracing yourself. Like, is my character going to die? And what people don't see, this is the thing, Kev, that people don't understand. When your character dies on a show, this is what people don't understand. It means you're not going to get paid anymore. Yes, you're done. Yes. You fulfilled your contract. You might have a lease on an apartment somewhere that now you don't know if you're going to live there anymore.
It's over.
More than just, she just got killed off the show. You now no longer have a job. I don't think people understand. Like, that's what that means. And I would see my other castmates going through it and like really emotional and crying and dealing with a lot. Like, what do I do now? I just signed a 6 months lease or a year lease and I got to go, or I don't have any more money, whatever it is. Like, it's a big deal. So every script that I got through that I was still alive, I'm like, okay, I'm still here. But then I started hearing little whispering that something big has to happen. We get in towards the end of the show. Like, there has to be a big moment. So something big has to happen.
Now, let me stop you just 1 second. I want the listeners to understand the power of a whisper. Mm-hmm. Okay? What Lala is saying about the whisper, what she's referring to, I'm hearing whispers. Well, let's go to class. Let's go to school. In school, rumors spread. Conversation started. You heard, oh my God, such and such did. What? Yeah, they saying, or I'm hearing. And it grows. The whispers grow on a set. A television set, a production in general. Right now, I can feel what her anxiety could be because she's watching it in real time. Mm-hmm. So now it's approaching. You're hearing whispers that it could be Keisha. Oh, fuck.
Yes,
It could be, but nobody's talked to me
Nobody's told me.
Okay, good.
Also, another thing about the whispers, you start seeing the change in the people around you. You're like, hey, good morning. They're like, hey, Lod, it's just the energy is starting to change. You're like, what's going on? Like, nobody's telling me anything. And then I got the call that Courtney, the showrunner, who's just amazing and 50, wanted to have a conversation with me. I said, oh, shit, here we go. So
you're This is season?
This is season six. This is like six, towards the end. But
I was going to say five.
Talks that Joseph, who plays Tommy on Force, there was always talks that him and I were going to spin off and have our own show. So it was going to be like the Bonnie and Clyde, the Keisha and Tommy, show, which I was excited about that. Like, then I would have my own show. And there was a lot of talk about that. So when I got in the office, they were just like, we just want to talk to you about something that we feel like we need this moment. And now is the time that it's over for this character. And, it was a tough conversation, but I'll never forget one thing 50 told me, and I will never forget this. He said, Lala, listen to me. He said, the show's ending anyway. He said, would you rather have an iconic ending that people will always talk about, or just disappear like some of the rest of the characters? You don't know what happened to them. They're just gone. And at that time, I didn't really understand it until it happened. And, it was voted as one of the most memorable scenes in television history, or something people will never forget, when my character was killed off the show. And that's something people still talk about to this day, like how it happened that my best friend, the character, Notori, who played my best friend, killed me. Like, how was that dynamic? It's still something that's talked about, that's studied in acting class. They run that particular scene. And I'm like, that was the right way to go, because the show was ending anyway. So it's like, what was going to happen? And I love that he put that in my mind. I was like, it's also time to do something else. You get comfortable 6 seasons on a show. You just playing the same character. You're in your zone. It's like, it's time for something else. And one thing about me, I'm always prepared for the transition. I've been transitioning my whole career. I've always been like transitioning. So I knew when he said that, I'm like, you're right, because you do get pigeonholed as to only be in that character. You can only do that. And then it's hard to do anything else. So it was right at the time where it was time for me to do something else.
That's so dope.
I was scared.
Of course. But by the way, rightfully so. Yeah. Rightfully so. Like, to your point, you're on season six. Mm-hmm. Season six. And what I want to highlight for my listeners that may not be aware of the show Power. Power is what I refer to as the saving grace for Starz. Mm-hmm. Starz Network is an amazing network, but Starz had no cultural identity. 50 and 50 success through producing and you know, creative was attached to Power. And after Power, you know, he was able to springboard and do so many other things. By the way, he had other things brewing before then. I think he had some things on ABC, mm-hmm. and a couple other projects. But Power was such an impactful thing because it gave Starz a pulse attached to the culture that they were able to springboard off of. So when she's talking about the most memorable scene or voted this, these things are correct because at the time, this is what the culture was talking about. This was our series, something that we were able to refer and identify with. Mm-hmm. Now, naturally, it comes to an end. But through 50s creative and now continued push and realizing that I can now take these characters and do more and spin off other opportunities present themselves. How did BMF come up?
So BMF came later. The in between was now me back auditioning again. And I have to give a special shout out to Lena Waif. That's for me when The Chi came along. Cause I had been.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Chi was before. Don't fucking do that, La. Don't skip my segues. Okay. Don't fucking skip my segues. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here, all right? I was going BMF, and then I was going fucking Chi. Don't do that. Okay, let's go Chi. Let's go Chi first.
I was always a fan of The Chi, and I would always write Lena, like, I love this show. If there's ever opportunity, I would love to get down with you guys. And then when Power was over, she was like, it's time. Like, I want you to come to Chicago.
What was the length? Give me the length in between.
So like, you finished Power. I would say couple months, nothing crazy. A couple months, like 3 or 4.
By the way, how dope is that?
Like, dope.
That how good of a feeling is it, you know, to put a punctuation on something, and then not long after, when most are in a thought of panic, mm-hmm. you're in a moment of discovery, and because of the relationations and the opportunities,
crazy. And it's like you never know who's watching. You never know mm-hmm. who's paying attention. And we always have to be conscious of that. Sometimes it's like, you just working and like, oh, what am I doing all this for? Does anybody even care? Is anybody taking me seriously? Mm-hmm. You never know who's watching. You never mm-hmm. know who's seeing the growth and the transition. Like, you just don't know. And Lena was watching and was like, wow. I've seen what you've done from the beginning till now. And I want to bring you into our world. So I went to Chicago and started shooting The Chi. And something that I'm really proud of is I got a nomination for my role on The Chi, NAACP nomination.
Yes, you did.
It's something I was so proud of. You're talking about a girl from Brooklyn who was on the radio, then MTV, told all you'll ever be is an MTV VJ, nothing else. Now you're getting nominations for like, yeah. Hold up. Like,
yeah, it's changing.
It's changing. It's changing. So it's changing. I was so excited about that. And then after that, you know, I did some films as well. Shout out to just Gabrielle Union. You know, we recently did The Perfect Fine, but just a person mm-hmm. that's always been in my corner, like, La, I'm paying attention. When I have something, I'm going to call you. And we were able to do that.
Relationships.
And another thing, you know, what's so funny? Cause we talked about Will Packer, and I always say this in my interviews, and he sends the clips to me, but Will always told me, like, he wants to work. Yes, of course you want to work with talented people, but you want to work with people that you like. And people yes. forget that. Like, you want to work with people that you like. I'll take someone that's talented and well-liked than somebody that's this amazing talent, but can't nobody stand and want to be mm-hmm. around. Like, mm-hmm. I'll take the other. So for me, I always wanted to be easy to work with, always prepared, always on time. And you're the same way. I've watched you many times. You're the same way. Like, we don't play around with being on time, you know, respecting mm-hmm. people's time, being polite to people. That's just who we are. And then the talent is there as well. But when you package it all together, we're people that people want to work with.
Absolutely.
And it's
you become the golden ticket.
Right.
The golden ticket is what I refer to as soon as someone says your name, attached to it is a golden ticket that people go, oh my God, such a good person. So cool. You know what? Nothing but like when people cash in great words immediately mm-hmm. attached to your name, it's the best thing. It's mm-hmm. the best reputation to have. Yeah. And by the way, you do have that. Like, that's not cap at all. You 1000% have that. And as we talk about just, you know, the world of game, we're going to The Chi. We're talking about another show. We're talking about another show that's like an impactful series. You're talking about something else that's like really made a dent in the world of television and attached to culture. And Lena's done an amazing job with that show. Then you talk about BMF coming back. You talk about 50. You talk about the progression. Okay, we now are in the space of saying, guys, I'm doing this for real.
I'm here.
I'm here for real, right? And casting directors and people in the industry, well, now they know. Mm-hmm. Here's the beauty of where I'm going now. Because it would stop for most. It would be a comfortable setting and a great energy. But now let's get into the business of Lala. The business of Lala is an amazing business as well. People don't know. People don't know about your world of business. People don't know like that you have your hands in a lot of things as an entrepreneur. I want to give you a huge shout out and congrats for your latest endeavor. You know, to my knowledge, this relationship with Airbnb is one of significance, right? You are, what are you? You're a director, creative advisor, right? These things aren't just given, right? These positions and titles and opportunities come for a reason. What I would like to know is more about the opportunity. Like, how did it come up? Why you? And what exactly does it mean? Like, what does it mean? Your involvement with Airbnb right now, which is such a successful brand in itself, is doing amazing work. What is the relationship with Lala? Like, define it so people can really understand what the position is.
Yeah, so I met Brian Chesky, the founder of Airbnb, through Beecher, who's a mutual friend, and he was like, I just think there's some synergy here. There's something cool that can happen here. And
when relationships,
when I talked to Brian Chesky about his vision, we totally aligned in, you know, why he created Airbnb and just his struggle in getting, I just admired how hard he worked and his passion and his dedication and his idea of bringing people together, bringing communities together. And I was always passionate about that. In our community, like bringing us together, looking out for each other, getting out of this crabs in a barrel mentality. And when I talked to him, I just realized how much our minds and our thoughts aligned. And I was like, this is a company who values people and community, and I want to be a part of that. And so when the opportunity presented itself and he came to me and said, you know, I would like to bring you on board as creative advisor, I was thrilled, because now I'm in a position to do exactly that. To bring people together, to bring communities together, to bring friends, you, other people into the Airbnb business and do great experiences that bring people together, that bring people closer to us. And I think in this day and age, we've missed out on a lot of that. Like, everyone's just isolated, doing their own thing after the pandemic, after COVID. Everyone's just in their own world. It's not a lot of socialization happening. Everything's just on the phone. It's time to get back to bringing people together. And I'm able to do that through the job at Airbnb and just bring great people, like I said, like yourself and people that I love and respect to the company and do great things together. I'm very excited about it.
Relationships. It all circles back, right? Once again, you don't get away from it. If you really approach it correctly and understand the importance of a handshake, a hello, and building, these things definitely come back around. And for you, as you're talking about, you know, an opportunity where you're attached to a brand, to a business, you're not attached to a brand in the business as a, just a face. You're attached to the business as a business, because the value that we feel we can get from you is an ecosystem, an incubator. Lala becomes an incubator for Airbnb. So now the progression attached to the brand can be attached to you. That's dope as fuck.
Thank you.
That's dope as fuck. And those things like are I want to say, like, sometimes they're not highlighted enough. Mm-hmm. Like when you look at these big entities that exist, sometimes people don't understand the success and the growth is attached to personnel, is attached to likeness, is attached to bandwidth. And right now, Airbnb is making smart decisions by broadening their bandwidth. And I love that they're doing it with you, La. I couldn't be happier for you. And I love to see you flourish in more ways than just the world of personality.
And like you said, Kev, it's the relationships. We keep talking about that, and I want people to really understand how important relationships are, because when I call you, when I call whoever, and I'm like, hey, there's this Airbnb thing, or I want you to sit down with, you know, our founder, whatever it is, like, there's no questions asked. You're like, blah, what time? Where do I need to be?
What do you
and
mean?
You know, like, you value our relationship that I'm only going to put you in a great situation. I'm not going to waste your time. And that's a beautiful thing to have those kind of relationships after all these years, to where I can pretty much call anyone and there's no questions, because I'm not calling with bullshit. I'm calling for a reason. When I called you, you didn't ask me a single question. It was literally like, all right, what time? Where do I need to be? What time?
I will be there. I will show up for you any day of the week at any time.
More Gold Mines with Kevin Hart after this.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today. For generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Now back to Gold Mines with host Kevin Hart.
I can't not talk to you and not talk about, you know, just the things that you're doing in the reform space, right? You know, like, there's been a lot of conversations attached to prison reform. And, you know, I think that there's a group of individuals that are doing great work here. Yourself, of course, is included. Meek, you know, Roc Nation. Kim has actually been active in this space as well. For you, I want to talk to you about 360 and, you know, just understand more of it. And for my listeners that may not know the work that you're doing there, just kind of table that for me for a second.
So 360 is a program that I started out of Rikers Island. If the listeners don't know, Rikers Island is, you know, a prison here in New York that's not considered a great one, you know, has a stigma attached to it. But I wanted to go in there and really do some mentorship and programming for the young incarcerated population. So ages 18 to 21 is what I focus on. And the reason I decided to do that is when I was talking to a lot of these young men, it was like I was talking to Cayenne. I saw my own kid and, you know, one bad decision, hanging with the wrong crowd, you know, wanting to be cool, wanting to fit in. And now all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation where you're locked up and you're like, how did I even get here? So once a week, we do weekly mentorship where we go in there and just talk to them about self-esteem, how to change, you know, negative thoughts into positive thoughts, just anything to build their self-esteem back up. And you realize so many of them, it's just the environment they grew up in, lack of love, lack of opportunities, lack of hope. And we try to instill all of this in them. And then upon their release, really link them up with employers to get jobs and really, you know, have a good, smooth re-entry into the community and the workplace. And like I tell everyone, listen, they're coming out anyway. So either they're going to be assets or they're going to be a problem. You can help me create assets in our community, or we're just going to continue to see problems in our community.
I love
that. I'm very grateful to Reform and Michael Rubin and who have given kids in my program jobs. And a kid in my program is over there working at Reform now. He's running their whole Gen Z division, and he just got accepted to Columbia University. Great things happen when you put people in the right situation with love and support. And that's what we're doing. And it's work that I'm passionate about and I'm really proud of.
Well, what I love about the idea attached to Reform is, like, you know, there's a misunderstanding attached to the quote unquote criminal, right? And there's a bubble that you put all criminals in because you assume that they're all the same. And, yeah, you know, the murderer, the, you know, I don't want to go in depth, but there's a grouping, and the lower tier gets grouped in with the higher tier. And the idea of probation is attached to the idea of an assumption. And the assumption is always horrible. I love that Reform is, like, changing the narrative and, you know, really allowing the prison sentence to be the punishment. But then after, you're giving the opportunity to rebuild. Exactly. It's saying, well, they did the time. After doing the time, what we're trying to do is give the opportunity to evolve. And if you don't have that, well, then my question is, like, well, then jail has no real meaning. No. It has no purpose. The punishment is supposed to teach you a lesson.
No.
And then ultimately the lesson that you learn from, you never go back to, you do better. That's what it's supposed to be.
You actually just back and you go back to jail again.
Yes, instead of creating a cycle, right. a hamster wheel. Right. So I love what you said. It's like, you know, these prisons are coming out anyway, and mm-hmm. they can either be assets or not. Mm-hmm. I love that you're giving them the opportunity to be valuable assets. I love that you're giving the time. Thank I love you. That you're taking out of your time, mm-hmm. out of your day, and saying the impact and positivity and voices that I'm able to provide them with are not going to be beneficial, but, like, fucking necessary. It's good shit.
It's so fulfilling, Kev. Like, the feeling you get, we talked about our children, but the feeling you get from seeing a success story, like the one kid, his name is Michael, that I mentioned, that's at Reform now. There's no greater feeling. I found, you know, this kid in Rikers Island, and now he's speaking on platforms with Kim Kardashian, with Meek Mill, and going to Columbia University. I mean, you can't dream it. It's mind-blowing. Huge. And to see it happen just because somebody said, hey, I got you. I love you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to be here for you. Amazing things can happen. And I'm excited to see a lot more stories like that.
It's huge. I don't want to put a funny moment on this, but I wouldn't be myself if I didn't. You know, there was a point in my career early on where I was performing at the prisons. I did a prison run.
I didn't know that about
you. Of comedy shows. Listen, this is 23-year-old Kev. Okay. And, you know, this comedian named Capone, who also was a promoter, he was like, yo, I got these gigs. These are great gigs. Man, they paying like $500 a show. You know, it's a prison run. So we're going to do like 8 prisons. And, you know, you don't have it. So you're like, yeah, no, if this is where the shows are, this is where you got to go. Some of my best shows that I've ever done in my life were done in a prison.
Wow.
Because they were so appreciative of talent coming and it being something. But also, some of the most fear that I've ever had as a comedian has come from those shows in prison. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, no, oh my God.
If you walk in there, there's nothing to play with.
Oh my God. No. Nothing to fucking.
Nothing to play.
You gotta look. You gotta have the face like you cool. But inside I was shitting myself. Oh my God.
Same.
As we now talk about just, you know, our world, right? We're talking about entertainment. We're talking about media. And we've crossed so many bridges to get to the conversation now. What I want to know is, like, you know, in the perfect world of what? Like, where's Lala's focus at today? Like, what are the things that you feel will best complete the chapter or chapters? What do you must have before it's all said and done? What else do you want right now from the business?
From the business, I would want to see more on the producing side. I would love to see, I am producing, but more of it to really identify stories that, you know, are compelling to me and things that I feel like will really push the needle out there and really get people to think. So identifying projects from a producing standpoint that maybe I can star in or maybe other people can star in, but really using, you know, the production side and identifying great projects is where I'm at now. I love acting. It's my passion. I would do it if I didn't get paid for it. I love it so much. So continuing to act. We're about to start, like you said, filming season 4 now of BMF. We go down to Atlanta in a couple of weeks to start that. So that's always fulfilling to me, just, you know, working on the character and building, you know, the character. I love that. And producing, that's where I'm at. And Airbnb has been great. And I feel like that's a long-term play for me. That's something that's going to be there, hopefully, God willing, for a long time, and something
it I will.
Can help, you know, the company continue to grow. I'm excited about that. And then, you know, I'm a mom first before anything. I mean, we're talking career, but I'm a mom before anything. And Kyan's getting ready to, he's in 11th grade, going to start getting ready to go to college and choose the school he wants to go to. So that's comes before anything.
Well, the dope thing about you talking about being a mom that I'm most impressed with is when you see kids and you see kids pick up the antidotes from their households, and him starting a business, him starting like the clothing line, him like the just being creative, being ambitious. I mean, that's got to be like the most fulfilling thing to you. How do you feel, you know, about that? Like when you hear him have an idea and follow through with the idea and look for this, the world of support, right? Not just to do for me, mom, and provide and give me, but like, here's what I'm doing and this is what I'm working towards. Watch me go do it. What's that level of feeling?
That I feel that's the greatest accomplishment, the greatest feeling, as you know, me feeling like I'm a great mom just trumps everything. And when he tells me, or other people, like, you know, you've raised a great son, you've done a great job, and shout out to his dad because we've done it together.
Absolutely.
It's like it's an amazing feeling. Like, you want to have great kids. You want to be a great parent. And in this world, we could get so caught up in our own lives and work and this that we just don't have the time. And next thing you know, these kids are out here terrorizing, you know, people and things. So to have him be an entrepreneur this young and be successful, I'm happy. And to see him so dedicated to school and being an athlete, he's an incredible basketball player. And just to see the dedication he puts into it, I've never had to wake this kid up to go to work out. I've never had to wake him up to go to the gym. We've never had any of those issues. He's self-motivated and disciplined. And that's an amazing thing to see.
You know, that was one thing. I remember Melo when we were talking for our listeners, Carmelo Anthony is his dad. And Melo was like, look, I don't want to force him to play the game. I don't want to push him until he tells me he's ready to be pushed. And, you know, that's what I'm waiting for. And I remember talking to Melo when he told me, he's like, nah, he's got that dog in him. Like he wants to do it. And now that he wants to do it, like, there's been a big change in just what he realizes he can be. And it's so dope just to see, once again, just any kid give a shit.
Yeah.
A kid give a shit.
Yep.
And go like, I give a shit about this thing. I want to work to get that thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That, I mean, you know, even with my kids, you know, I got one in college, one going to the 11th grade next year. He's a sophomore, crushing in track. And then, you know, I got my two youngest, my two babies. But to see my oldest give a shit, like, that's what you pray for. It's like, please, just let my kids give a shit.
Legit, exactly.
Just please, just give a shit. Don't not give a shit. Because I know what it was like to not give a shit. I don't know about you, but I didn't give a shit for a little while. And I got lucky.
Yeah.
I got lucky in not giving a shit. Not that my mom didn't do an amazing job, because she did. I was just a late bloomer with, like, the realization of productivity.
Right. And also, it's not what we saw. Like, I mean, in my life, it's not like we saw these mega successful people. People was just grinding, making ends meet, tired all the time, working multiple jobs. That's what you saw. So it was like, you didn't know what to strive for. You didn't know what to give a shit about. Cause it was just like, everybody looks miserable. They working their ass off. They come home, they sleep. It's just like, everybody's just on this hamster wheel. And you didn't know what success looked like or had something to say, oh, I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that.
Well, you know, you're big on family. And that's one thing that I've always seen. It's something that makes me smile. Just like, that's a thing that you cater to, that you're true to. Mm-hmm. I should have asked you this earlier and I did it, but you know, through the push and want for more, how much of a role did your family play, in just supporting you to just stay consistent and persistent? And second piece to that question is, was there ever a moment where you almost said, fuck it? We almost said, fuck it, man. Like, this shit ain't it. And I'm about to go find something else.
Yeah. I mean, my family has been great. They've always supported me. My mom's been incredible in helping me with Cayenne through, you know, allowing me to be able to take certain jobs and then, you know, helping with him, which has been great. Mm-hmm. But there's been many times. It was a time recently where I was like, is it worth it? Like, is this hard work to this, at this stage in my life and career, is it worth still going this hard? Like, Kev, you know, I go hard. And I'm like, do I just need to kind of slow down a little bit? And for Cayenne's sake, with all, you know, everything he has going on, like, I'm always present, but you always feel like you could be even more present. I was just in West Virginia shooting a movie, and it just so happened the week I'm shooting the movie was the week of his winter break. I'm like, just my luck. The one week he's off is I'm in West Virginia shooting this movie. He can't come because he has basketball and stuff. And you start questioning, like, is it worth it? Like, I want to be there with my kid on his days off and have fun with him. So you go through that as a parent. But also when I hear him talk about how seeing me be so motivated and career driven, you know, inspires him and pushes him to want to do more and be more, then it makes you feel like it is worth it. Because our kids are watching everything that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. I love you being transparent about that. You know, once again, it's about gems. And, you know, I can only hope that my listeners take away the gems. But that moment of doubt, that moment of like, fuck, you know, those lows are real. And the lows only prepare you for the success of the high. And sometimes just addressing the low and you know, overcoming that low is a test to basically see, like, are you really committed? And within the world of commitment, do you have what it takes? Do you break? It's very hard to not break.
It's very hard to not break. And you see so many people break. You see so, and it's like, I get it. Like, I get how this work and this industry and the pressure, like, can really break people. Like, I've seen some of the best get broken by it. It's not easy to keep your head on straight with everything, all this shit coming at you all day long, trying to have a life, trying to deal with this, that, and social media and people saying this. Everyone has a comment on your life. That shit is not easy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you're a celebrity or you have money. So what is there to complain about? What are you complaining about it for? Well, goddamn, I'm a person with feelings. I deal with feelings. Like, I'm just supposed to not feel anything because what? I got some extra money in the bank? That's not how it works.
Well, I will tell you this. If there ever is a moment of doubt, lie, you look at that goddamn boy. Mm-hmm. You got to look at that boy. Yep. And I want you to understand every time you look at that boy, that is a pure example of what he sees.
Yep.
He's a product of his environment. Mm-hmm. And that is a powerful thing to understand. Mm-hmm. When you look at your kids, understand that those kids are a reflection of you in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. So if you see a kid getting up for practice, as you said, if you say, oh, he's on time, he doesn't miss a workout, well, he can't go because he has this. His responsibilities are forward thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's because he comes from a household that's been committed to being responsible, being committed to having a purpose. So that doubt that you may have had, like you just said a little bit ago, every fucking time, I don't give a shit if you keep it in your fucking phone. I carry a picture of my mom in my wallet.
That's cool.
I got a picture of my mom and my wallet.
Right.
And the reason why I got a picture of my mom and my wallet is simply because whenever I'm pulling out like a credit card or like my ID or something, I got to go through my mom's thing. And it's a memory to me. It doesn't matter what the fuck it is. Like, the responsibility, the commitment, the drive, it comes from this face. So every once in a while, I just need a reminder of that face because she's not here.
That's deep.
Fucking look at that goddamn boy. It's a dope thing. Mm-hmm. It's a very dope thing. And I won't get too sappy on you. I still got more to talk about, right? I still got more to talk about. I got to get to the world of fun now.
Okay.
Right? And then speaking of the world of fun, this is quite the transition, but people, I want you guys to understand Lala Anthony is responsible for now what I would call Halloween festivities that are done on a yearly basis. And Lala's Halloween parties are big deals. These are things. You take Halloween very serious, right? Very, very serious. And the reason why I want to talk about this is because it takes a special person to understand the value of Halloween and the value and commitment to costume. You have done it. You have done it, and you are committed to it. When did the love for Halloween start, and how did it get to the level that it's at today?
I love Halloween. It's just another day to be creative, to express yourself, to get in character, to feel it, to wear the clothes, to become something else. Same thing with acting. It's all about creating characters. And I got more into it when Lenny S. kept calling me saying, we got to do Love Halloween. I love Halloween. Let's start doing this annual party. And we could never have imagined it would become what it's become. But to have everybody just, where's the party? What? And they go crazy for it. But again, you know what it is for me? Going back to what I said, bringing people together,
bringing
community together, having fun together. We all get so caught up in our lives that you can go years without seeing each other or talking to each other. And the problem with social media is I see your page every day, Kev. So I'm fully in tune with what you have going on. In my mind, I've talked to you every day. Yeah. I might not have, but I'm seeing you on the gram. So I'm like, oh no, Kev's good. He's with his family. They went here today. I think I know everything, but I haven't actually called you and connected with you. And that's the problem sometimes. We got to stay connected. So this party, to me, brings everybody back together.
It's connective tissue. How far in advance are you thinking of the costumes?
I think a costume is probably like, I would say like, 3 months in advance.
Oh, okay. I was putting you like a 6 to 8 month.
No, 3 months is enough time. 3 months.
Three months. Yeah. 3 months, you're cracking the code on the idea and you're putting it together. Okay. Exactly. I'm not mad at that. I'm a little longer if I'm going to do it. If I'm going to be in town for it, I'm a little longer. I think my best one to date is when I was Tyrion. Was it Tyrion from Game of Thrones?
Okay.
Yes. When I did the little
How long did it take you to do that?
Well, I just went full out. I went full throttle with the costume. I got everything like custom made and the wig and everything. But I thought, I was like, this is gonna be a big one. This is gonna be a big, big one. Like, that's which one is gonna be the big one for me? I don't know what I'm gonna do this year. I think I'm gonna be in town. I have to make one of yours. The thing is, you go in New York, so yeah. I want to, like,
now it's gotten so big. Lenny say we're doing bi-coastal now, LA and New York. So I'll make sure you know when it's all happening.
I need to go. I'm going to go. I'm never.
You're always working.
Yes, I'm always working. That is very true. Just we don't need to put a stamp on that. Okay, now just I'll fix it and I'll make it. I'll make it happen. You just mark my words. What I want to know is this, the world of like storytelling. You have such an amazing story. Have you put any thought into the idea of like talking about your journey, like from point A to point Z? Have you put any thought to the world of like, you know, a book or like really, really papering just the trials, the tribulations, the mindset attached to the goal at hand, and pretty much like the success in fulfilling the idea of the goal. Are you thinking about that? Would you write a book? Do you want a book?
So I wrote a book a long time ago, long, long time ago. It was called The Love Playbook. And that's when I was married. And it's like, here's the playbook and rules to love. And then you realize that you really don't know shit about love. And there's no rules. And there's no, it's kind of like, think like a man. Like, there's really no rules. In the end, it is what it is. So I think now that I've experienced life in a different way, also, you know, being married and now being not married anymore is a new space. And just, you know, navigating through that space. It's been a while, but still understanding what that space looks like. I think there is story there. I think it's inspiring story for women out there that, you know, life does go on and you can go on talking about even co-parenting and being great parents to our son, which is something that we do incredibly well, and understanding the importance of co-parenting and getting along. I think there's so much story there that it's something I would consider, you know, revisiting and thinking about, because, you know, you want your story to be a testament to what people have gone through, and you want to be able to help people out there. So many people went through the same thing and had no outlet, no one to talk to, no one they felt understood it. So I've been there, and I want to be, you know, a voice for all of that. And it doesn't have to be negative. Like,
no, that's what I was about to say. Like, this is
Mello and I get along great. We were at Cayenne's game yesterday, sitting together. We laugh. We have a great time. Like, everything doesn't have to be negative. And, oh, I hate him. It doesn't have to be that. And you have to remember the kid or the kids are watching. They see everything.
Hence why I bring it up. And I keep telling you, you know, I told you earlier on, I tell Melissa all the time, this is just a platform for fucking positivity. When I say, like, you have an amazing story, you have an amazing story of audibles, mm-hmm. of pivots. And think about those words for a second. Mm-hmm. Think about those words, goldminders. Audibles and pivots is what you call when you want to fucking change. Mm-hmm. A pivot is what you take when you need to go in another direction. And there should be no fear attached to change. Mm-hmm. There should be no fear attached to the new thing that you have to do or that you're going to do. More importantly, there should be a level of acceptance. And if you have a story that's attached to doing that in so many different ways and still finding a through line to happiness, still finding a through line to, like, the thing that you want to do, I'm still going to get to the thing that I want to do. That's a fucking important story to be told. Right? I mean, you do a lot of things, but those stories, those opportunities to voice mm-hmm. the things that you've done or the things that you've been through or the move that you've made and the road that you took to get there, people do need that.
Yeah.
People do need the ammunition of to know, fuck, it's not just me, mm-hmm. right? Like, a lot of people feel like it is just them. And I personally, knowing you, I just think your story is dope as fuck.
Thank you.
Dope as fuck. At some point in time, you should, like, just think about what that looks like. Think mm-hmm. about what that would be. And, you know, ultimately, talking to you just from a business perspective, that's revenue on the table. Don't leave that there.
Definitely.
Somebody right else there. Will take it. Yes, no,
they'll take it. They'll yeah, take it. All right.
Don't take it. It's right there on the table. It's right there on the table.
Definitely.
Look, I can talk to you all day because that's what I love to do. And I can't hear because, unfortunately, all good things have to come to an end. But what I will say is this. I don't take for granted you saying, Kev, yeah, I'm going to fuck with you. I'm going to do the podcast. I don't take it for granted when anybody gives me their time. I respect and I value your time. I'm going to tell you this. I think that the best is yet to come. And, you know, I think the success and the opportunity to rebrand and rebuild yourself from the world of the MTV host that once was to the actress that we now know to the personality that we love, more important to just a fucking great voice, a great face, and a great goddamn example. That's what you are. And what you're doing from an entrepreneur standpoint, from a business standpoint, I'm watching you. And I just think that you got some more shit. You got some more dope shit simply because you're one of those people that just can't sit down. You got that disease. You can't sit down. And you want more and you will get more. And I hope that the listeners took away a lot of the dope shit that you said. And a lot of it was attached to ambition. Follow through, want, and the need to prove, like, naysayers wrong, and more importantly, prove yourself right.
Exactly.
That's what I took from this conversation.
That's true.
You wanted to prove yourself right, and you felt I can do, and since feeling that way, well, you've done. So don't stop fucking doing. Yeah,
this is inspiring, and thank you for allowing me to have this platform to talk and just catch up with you. Like, we need more of this. Like you said, we need more of these just real, authentic, unfiltered conversations. Everything now is just so cookie cutter. Okay, so tell them about the next project. Tell them, like, this is just a different conversation, and it's refreshing to me to have it. So thank you for giving me this platform to do this with you today.
I think it's going to be refreshing for listeners to hear you talk the way that you talk and to hear you speak with the passion that you speak with. I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Gold Mines. You know what we do here. God damn it, we drop gems. It's your choice to pick them up. If you choose to pick them up, then goddamn it, you'll choose to capture a reward at some point in time. Mm-hmm. If you choose to let that gold just sit on the ground,
that's on you. then that's
ultimately
on you.
It's on you. There you go. Thank you. I love you, La. Love you.
I love you.
Bye.
Gold Mines with Kevin Hart is a Sirius XM and Laugh Out Loud radio production and executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, and Eric Weil. Produced by Danny Sellers and Leslie Guam. Engineered by Danny Sellers.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.